Okay, we are now recording. Mike, before we go into the questions I have specifically about how you guys are bringing diversity into your hiring practices, if you could, let's start with you giving me just a brief overview of your role at
Yes.
Reductio, and also so just some background information. I understand that you are a cloud storage platform, correct?
Well, we're more than cloud storage, and I can certainly describe what we do.
Yeah, so give me some background information on your company and then your role within the company, and then we can dig into the subject matter.
That's great. Okay, so first, a little bit of background on Reductio. Reductio is a company that was founded just short of 5 years ago. We have been shipping product now for approximately 2 years. We are in the advanced data storage, management, and protection space. We've taken a radically new architectural approach that we believe was necessary in this new digital economy that we live in. We've gotten quite a bit of market validation. We were best of VMworld when we launched. We've got over 200 systems installed to date. We have a wide range of customers across a wide range of industries. The company has raised about $65 million in total in venture capital. We've got a large presence in the U.S. We've got a significant presence in Israel, which is where our development operations center is headquartered and where the company was founded. And we've got an increasing presence in Europe. We have been very positively reviewed by Forrester Research. We're anticipating, and we've read a report that will be out any day now, by IDC, by a number of other key industry influencers in the analyst space, and by some of the top thought leaders in the infrastructure space, like Chris Mellor at The Register. So we're at a point right now where we're growing rapidly. We released a brand new product in June, and it's selling very well in its first quarter in the marketplace. So hopefully that's a little bit more. I don't know if that's what you were looking for,
Yeah,
but
absolutely. That's perfect.
okay. Now my role. So my role at Reductio is interesting in that I'm the only guy on the management team that hasn't spent his entire career in the storage industry. And as the subject of our discussion today is around diversity, I bring some unique diversity to this management team. So I think it bears just a little bit of context. 30 years ago, when I finished my undergraduate degree, I went backpacking across Europe for a year. And it turns out that Reductio's current CEO had the same idea. And we wound up meeting in London and spent 6 months backpacking around Europe together before we went our separate ways, but we stayed in touch. And he had reached out to me when he was getting ready to take the Reductio product to market, said, "We've been talking about working together for a long time. I'd love to have you join the team." And at that point, I'd more or less retired from my startup activities. I'd done seven prior that were successful. I was teaching and speaking. But what Mark wanted me to do was bring a different approach to the way that the storage industry went to market. The storage industry is a very traditional industry, and they've used a lot of what I'll call 1950s era industrial techniques, print ads, trade shows, and they were just horrific at spamming people. So one of the reasons that I was brought in was to bring the storage industry's marketing into the present day. A lot more digital, a lot more social, a lot more community building, and a lot more agile. And so my role is I run marketing, strategic marketing, so analyst relations and key influencer relations, primary media spokesperson. But we have a significant digital marketing machine that we continue to, evolve and refine and improve day in and day out. And demand gen for any startup, right? Customer acquisition in a viciously competitive market is critical. And so a very important part of what I also focus on is making sure that we continue to build out this marketing machine day in and day out. And, we've really begun in the last 2 quarters to see an inflection point in how we're delivering, capability to our sales force and our global channels. In addition, you know, I have the strategy portfolio as well, and I'm a former McKinsey consultant and spend a lot of time as a professor thinking about disruptive business models in innovation and culture. And another part of what Mark wanted me to do is to create a completely different way of going to market. And now that we have validated the product, our next phase is to do something radically different in the industry, to take a page out of what HubSpot has done, what Slack has done, what SolarWinds has done, and to create not a product company but a platform company. And we're in the early stages right now of doing that. So these are the things that really excite me.
All right. I want to go back just to one minor little detail and ask about when you met Mark, the CEO,
yes,
while you guys were backpacking around London, were you,
yes,
I don't want to assume, but were you both from the States?
No. So Mark is a Canadian from Montreal.
Okay.
And he happened to be, like I am, pretty serious-minded guy. And unlike a lot of the people that were there to, you know, drink as much as they possibly could consume, we were there to learn about the world, right? And so we backpacked across. It was just before the Berlin Wall came down. So the
okay,
Iron Curtain was very much in place, and we went through Checkpoint Charlie, and we had a firsthand look at what it was like to live on the eastern side of the wall. But he's a French-Canadian, and it was great to have a friend who, one, was fluent in French, and who also had a Canadian maple leaf on his backpack, because people love Canadians in a way they've never loved Americans. So, and he also had just finished his engineering program as well, and so we had a lot in common.
Okay, and where are
we,
you from?
We had a great time together.
And what state are you from?
I'm from New York City. I was born and
okay,
raised in Brooklyn in the New York City area, and then I now live in Boston, although with our commercial headquarters in San Francisco and our DevOps in Tel Aviv, Israel, and my teaching role, I'm on the road a couple hundred days a year.
You're all over the place, yeah.
Yeah,
and
so I keep my stuff in Boston, but I rarely am there with it.
Okay, the only reason I ask is just because that's a great lead-in to how you guys met, you know, relevant to the topic of diversity. So that I don't want you to think I wasn't paying attention to the details.
No, it's
of the
all good. All
that,
good. No, it's great. I mean, listen, it's a very unusual way of meeting someone who you're going to wind up.
It's a great origin story for sure.
Yeah, and we stayed in touch, and I was the guy that convinced him that startups were way better than working for big old companies. And God bless Mark. He joined NetApp as employee badge number 2 in Europe, and he and our president, John, grew it to be a $1 billion revenue business, and they had an extraordinarily successful experience. So I think Mark is eternally grateful that I identified for him that startups could be a lot more interesting than big companies, and, you know, it was sort of one of our areas of collaboration over the years.
Okay. Well, now I'd like to go ahead and focus on what the interview, the subject matter is, and that's the importance of bringing diversity into the working environment. So if we could start just by you giving me your take on why a diverse team is so important in today's working environments, and you know, specifically in a technology-driven field.
Yep, absolutely. So, I mean,
audience.
In general, to me, right, and I don't know, Amy, if design thinking is something that you're familiar with, or you have, you know, if you know what IDEO does, or you understand sort of this incredibly new discipline that's really taken off by storm. But I've been a long-term design thinker, and at the very core of design thinking is the best solutions are created when you have very diverse teams, because you don't want to have, in any way, groupthink. Technology companies are especially prone to groupthink, because they've always valued technical skills disproportionately. They've always regarded themselves as, hey, if I've created a great invention, then by all means, you know, there's no reason why it's not going to be incredibly successful. So let's just get a bunch of smart technical people together. We'll come up with something very, very unique, very novel. And I won't say innovative, because to me, innovative means that there's some commercial potential. And let's go sell the heck out of it. And almost never does that work. And for many years, as I taught at MIT and I judged in the MIT 100K Business Plan Competition, I saw this repeated again and again and again. Incredibly competent technologists would come up with inventions, and they would fail, and they would fail miserably. So to me, the very best startup teams are, by their very nature, diverse. There was, in fact, a study done by MIT that I think it had gone out to about 500 different startups, and it was statistically relevant, that proved, you know, and this is many, many years ago, that this was an absolutely critical success factor in startups, but the MIT community more or less ignored it. So if you think about how complex the world is today and how quickly information is coming at us, you need people with multiple perspectives, multiple viewpoints, multiple sets of experiences to, you know, provide sort of a holistic view of what's really happening in the world. And I'm a very big believer that that diversity is gender diversity, it's age diversity, it's country of origin diversity, it's functional experience diversity. And, you know, when you allow yourself to be open to hearing from people that bring a different perspective, the very best ideas I've ever seen typically were not ideas from a single person. They were a mashup of ideas that came from multiple people. When the team was open-minded enough to say, you know, what I love, the phrase is yes and, as opposed to yes but, right? Yes, if we do this and we do that, that would be amazing. As opposed to the technology approach, which is yes but. Let me tell you why that's not going to work. So I have this perspective from now 8 startups that I've been a C-level executive, as someone who has moderated, led countless hackathons around the world, who is someone who has done, and this is something you've probably not heard of before, but Lego Serious Play workshops. The use of Legos specifically to engender creativity, so that when executive teams are struggling with very wicked problems, tough problems, one of the ways to open up their minds is to get them to do a problem-solving session around a table full of Legos, and, you know, to tap into a level of creativity that they normally can't get to when they're in a more guarded state.
Right.
And you surround them with people that are not from the company to help them with that. From these open innovation platforms like Innocentive, where oftentimes large companies struggle to get a project completed, and when they open up that challenge to the world and expose it to the world publicly, it's almost always people from outside the industry or outside the domain that crack the problem, that companies that have been spending hundreds of millions or billions of dollars unsuccessfully and failing couldn't crack, and someone from outside with a fresh perspective cracks the code. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this has been so broadly applied in my own experiences over 25 years that I can't imagine not having a diverse team. And I'll share maybe one last example with you, right? So one of the initiatives that I've been very very satisfied to be involved with for a long time is something called the Holt, H-U-L-T, Prize. The Holt Prize is where Mr. Holt, whose name is on the Holt International Business School, where I now teach, gives away $1 million every year to the winner of a global social entrepreneurship competition. And each year, one of the 20 United Nations Grand Challenges is set as the challenge, and 50,000 students apply. And as we get our way through the competition, we narrow down to 5 finalists that then get to present to a very, very significant people, a group of global leaders, including Bill Clinton and Muhammad Yunus and others. And when I coach teams in the Holt Prize, what I always say is, I'm going to give you some advice right now, and I know a lot of you are not going to follow it. The most diverse team is going to win. And what you often wind up with, a lot of people that want to work with people they're comfortable with, people that they, you know, they speak the same language, they come from the same country, whatever it might be. But every year, the team that wins is the most diverse team. And, you know, they're in different degree programs because we offer 7 or 8 different degree programs. They come from different countries. They've done different things before they showed up. And 100% of the time, the diverse team wins. So I don't know if I've answered your question. I went to...
Absolutely. You know? I love it. You've given me some great pull-out quotes as well. So I did receive a image that was an overview of, I'm probably not going to articulate it correctly, your hiring strategy.
Hiring strategy, okay. So I'm not sure if I saw that image. Now,
I don't know if
Megan had sent you an image of our, the MarTech award we just won, but I'd certainly at some point like to talk about that with you.
Yeah, Mike, that is what we sent over. It was the MarTech stack.
All right. Okay, so let me though, 2 separate but related things, right? So the image that you received is something that we submitted, and we were just named as part of the MarTech conference that was attached to the Inbound conference. We got a global overall winner for the most innovative marketing tech/org stack. And I'd love to talk about that. But let me talk about our hiring process because I think it is unique.
And specifically, if you could just give me the steps you've taken to create that diverse atmosphere that you laid out in your first answer and how diversity is playing into your hiring practices overall.
Absolutely. So if you look at my team today, I don't have a single person working for me that is from America, which is a remarkable thing in a startup, I would say, a U.S.-based startup. So as you know, right, the global war for talent is incredibly competitive. And startups are all about people, right? You are competing with global giants that are endowed with budgets that are orders of magnitude bigger than yours. So the only way you're going to win is with great, great people. And I've always been a believer that, you know, I don't care where your daddy went to school or how much money you've got in the bank account, right? I'm looking for fire in your soul. That to me is what makes a great startup person. And so I have the good fortune as a professor of interacting with 1,000 students a year all around the world. And I teach courses that are very relevant to what I do. I teach courses on entrepreneurship and innovation and digital and social marketing. And so I have the opportunity to see these students, how they perform in the classroom. But I also do a lot of things outside the classroom. I run hackathons. I run design sprints. I run the Open IDEO chapter in Boston, which is applying design thinking to social impact. When I run the hackathon on campus, the hackathon is, at least one of them is always on behalf of Reduxio. We give students a number of real-world, real-time marketing challenges that we're struggling with the belief that you can bring in crowdsourced ideas from people from outside the industry and get incredible insights, which we talked about before. And so normally what will happen then is, you know, through interacting with these students in the classroom, through other extracurricular activities, and then finally, you know, seeing how they perform in hackathon, that's when we start to get very serious about inviting certain students to join us as interns. And at that point, 2 years ago, we had 35 interns working for Reduxio with a company with only 70 full-time employees. So you can imagine. It was quite an exercise to keep that many students managed over the course of a 5-month period. And then as you're working with these students now in a very tangible way on Reduxio-specific initiatives and projects, you see people rise to the surface. And then the students graduate, and you know, be very clear, Holt is a school where 90% of the students are not American citizens. So there's all kinds of immigration and H-1B issues. And it creates a huge amount of anxiety in normal times, but in these times, you can't even begin to imagine just how anxious students are about, you know, the dream that they still want to live, right? The dream my grandparents live, which is to come to America and live a life in freedom.
No, I interviewed the Barnes & Noble College CMO a while back, and she talked about, we were talking about content that does well, And she says anything that speaks to anxiety is just
yeah.
through the roof right now. It's so sad.
It is so sad. It's sad. You know, I mean, there's just general anxiety, of course, given what's going on
right.
in the world around us. But then you have these incredibly talented, hungry, ambitious young men and
right.
women that just want to have a fulfilling career.
Yeah.
And they dream of, you know, doing this in Silicon Valley or Boston or in some, you know, innovation cluster. And the odds are more stacked against them than ever. And the only reason I raise this issue is when the students graduate, you know, we have a very open talk with them, which is, this is a startup. It's an extremely risky proposition. There is no way that we can guarantee that you're going to get an H-1B. If you work hard with us, we will sponsor you. We will cover your legal expenses. We will do all the things we need to do to help you be successful in getting through that process. But recognize the odds of success are only 1 in 3. And it comes down to a personal choice, right? Not everybody has the ability to live with ambiguity and uncertainty. And sometimes people that we'd really love to work with us just don't have the stomach for living with that uncertainty, and they'll go home to their home country, or they'll try to get a job with a bigger company where they feel like they have maybe a little bit more security. So we've seen how they perform technically and then and functionally, and then, you know, you really get a feel for who are the people that embody the values that we have, and you see that over the whole course of the year, and then who's able to live with the uncertainty, the anxiety, and the stress of a young startup. And over time, you know, those people then sort of self-identify. They reveal themselves. And so, you know, I go from 1,000 down to 4 or 5 people, and these people are stunningly good at what they do. And it doesn't matter to me if they're from Mars. If they fit our culture and they get the job done, we're going to hire them.
Mm-hmm.
So right now I have on my team a person from Mexico, 2 people from Venezuela. Venezuela had an incredible educational infrastructure before the country went into a tailspin. They invested heavily in education. And I've met just an amazing number of very well-educated, very intelligent Venezuelan students over the years. Although now with the currency basically crushed, they can't afford to come anymore. So that talent pool has dried up. I've got an employee from Argentina. I've got an employee from Israel. And you know,
and are
and
all
me,
these employees based
yeah.
in the U.S. right now?
Well, many of them are. Many of them are based in our commercial headquarters in San Francisco.
Okay.
And we have sponsored all of them for H-1Bs. 2 of them did not get H-1Bs. And unfortunately for them, you know, they now have the onus of operating under a student visa. Right, and so what happens is you need to have some immigration status to stay in the country. We paid their legal fees, we paid their challenge fees, and one of them literally was just denied a couple of days ago, but what he's doing, and he's from India, what he's doing is he's going for his master's degree in the evenings and on weekends and continuing to work for us during the day, so that allows him to stay in the country. So he, you know, here he didn't plan to go for a second master's degree, but he loves working with us. We love having him, and we're very lucky to have him on the team. He's got a great work ethic, great personality. So now he's, you know, this is the kind of commitment that you see, right, these immigrant values. I mean, to work in a startup and go for a full-time master's degree is an incredible commitment. But he's up for it, right? And I've now known him for 2 years, and there's never been a question that he would do it if he had to. Now, my Argentinian employee lives in Argentina. It's a long story, but he's very much one of us, and he's here once a quarter with us. And my my Israeli employee works back in Tel Aviv at our DevOps center.
Okay, so this hiring strategy, I just want to confirm, it applies to the entire workforce within Reduxio, not just your marketing team, correct?
Well, I think I take a slightly different approach, only because I'm here in America. Most of the headcount is in Israel, right,
okay.
for sure. Most of the headcount is in Israel. And I'm the one who's the professor that you know, brings people from all around the world. That said, though, we have an extremely diverse culture back in Israel as well. Okay, we've got, I mean, if you look at the executive team, Jacob is from Israel. Mark's from Canada. John and I are Americans. Nir is originally from Germany. Amnon is Israeli. So, you know, the executive team is very diverse. Our investor group is very diverse. We have Israeli investors, UK investors, US investors. We're now looking at Asian investors. We want that diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the composition of our development team, we've got people from Russia, from the Ukraine, from Lithuania, from many places in Eastern Europe, as well as, you know, from Israel and from India. And we've even got a couple of Americans in the mix that have made aliyah, if you will, right? Aliyah meaning you've returned back to your ancestral homeland. So there's a big focus on diversity, and I probably take it to an extreme level with what I've described to you.
I'm curious, and we can, this would probably touch more on a question I have later down on my list about how you're involved in this diversity conversation beyond just your corporate strategies. But
I'm
curious if the current climate, political climate here, has at all changed how your C-level team is talking about strategy for your company. And
yeah,
this is
a great
definitely
question.
Outside of what we kind of have planned on talking about, but I think it's relevant for sure.
It's very relevant.
And
right?
It's probably
a
conversation lots of C-level executives are having right now.
Yeah, I mean, listen, so I wound up, for whatever reason, I think because of my role at Holt and the incredibly globally diverse nature, right? We're ranked by the Financial Times and The Economist as the most globally diverse management school in the world. And by the way, we're also the world's largest graduate management school. I was interviewed by CBS TV, by Fast Company, by Inc., by Al Jazeera English for my views. And my views are my views. And that's, you know, this country was built on immigration. And anybody that has skill should be given the right to work. So my views are very public, and the company agrees with those. But there's no question that if, as this year, right, what we heard from our lawyer was that there was no reason whatsoever why Narayan should have been denied, given his previous educational experience, his unique skills, his work history with us, right? And so he was challenged by, you know, the Immigration Department. We responded in great detail, and he was denied anyway. And we had another woman who had been one of my interns, one of my early contracted employees, but just couldn't deal with the startup culture, moved on to another company. You know it well, but I won't mention it here. And she won incredible accolades from this company. It's a MarTech company, by the way. And she was denied, and she had what is called a NAFTA visa. And a NAFTA visa, I've got many people that I know that had NAFTA visas, and it was almost a formality to be able to continue to work in a country, in the United States. And she was denied. So there's no question with the current environment as it is, you know, we're going to have to step back and look at, you know, how do we continue to do this in a way that works? Because, you know, for both the new employees and us, right, we want them to feel like they're a part of the company. And two of them are with us right now on student visas with the hope that maybe next year things get better. But there's no indication from Washington that they will, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a very, very anxiety-producing time for all of us. I was heartbroken and very deeply disappointed to see Narayan not getting approved because he's absolutely skilled, and there was nothing in his application that should have prevented him from getting, you know, getting his application approved.
Mm-hmm.
And we both know this is going to have a negative effect on the American innovation economy for sure.
Right,
you see
right.
Canada is a big beneficiary today. You see Mexico, Guadalajara is becoming a significant software development cluster. And, of course, you see very senior-level Chinese government officials saying, hey, come to China now.
Right.
You know,
right.
We'll welcome you, and that doesn't help us at all.
Right.
It's so short-sighted. It's insane.
There's so much insanity right now.
It's beyond comprehension. It really is.
It really is, and it's so refreshing to have this conversation. So many of my interviews are so not. part of this topic.
Yeah.
And it feels,
listen, this is what made America the most innovative country on the planet.
Right.
And this is what's going to kill us if we don't figure out how to, you know, move through this quickly.
Yeah.
And you see, you know, for the first time over the last couple of days, a couple of significant Republican senator leaders not just resigning, but resigning with great oratory about how broken things are.
Uh-huh.
But it's going to take a revolution to reverse this. It really is. And it's done a lot of damage, because I will tell you that the number of H-1B applications fell by about, I think it was 40,000.
Oh,
and the
wow.
problem is that the best talent, when they know that there's a very high, they're very low likelihood of being accepted, they're going to go somewhere else, because they can work anywhere they want. They can go to London. They can go to, you know, Vancouver. They can go to wherever in the world they want to apply their incredible skills and talents.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we are shooting ourselves in the foot.
Right.
And it's going to be hard to reverse. It really is.
Well, one of my questions was, what are companies losing when they fail to make diversity part of their hiring practice? And so specifically, if we can just speak to that.
I really think they're losing the essence of what innovation is all about.
Okay.
I think that, you know, and let me maybe step back for a second. If you think about, if someone was to ask you, Amy, you know, in the early 1990s, you know, is it possible that Apple would potentially be working on an automobile or a telephone?
Mm-hmm.
You would laugh, like, come on, what are you, crazy?
Right.
Right. If you think about the way that innovation is no longer respecting boundaries, that industries are no longer neatly delineated, right? New disruptive innovations are coming from anywhere. And every industry has to have a far more holistic view of the world than they ever did. And so one of the roles I play at Reduxio is I'm the guy that pays attention to what's going on in the entire world, not just in the storage industry. And, you know, there are a lot of things that I'm interested in, that I pay attention to, that I read about, that my peers probably don't. And I'm making them aware of new business models and new approaches that, quite frankly, are critically important to our future success, but they're just not a part of their reality. And this is not to criticize my clients. It's just the way the world works. People get very specialized and they get very focused. And I think when you do not allow diversity at the executive table, when you don't allow a diversity in your first-level management team, you have many blind spots. And in this, what I call permanent fast-forward innovation economy that we live in, where the world is coming at you faster and faster, and where the average half-life of an S&P 500 company has fallen from 75 years to 15 years, right? The room for error has gotten smaller and smaller. Look at BlackBerry, right? It took 6 years for them to have 90% of the smartphone market to being on the brink of bankruptcy.
Right.
Right, and so these dynamics are getting more and more challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think companies lose a tremendous amount of perspective and context and lose the ability to fill blind spots that are going to kill them. That's how I would describe it.
And so can you give me
a
specific or anecdotal example of a time where this practice has positively impacted your bottom line or any strategy, but, you know.
Of course. The most simple is right in the marketing domain. We are able to, with a very small team and a minuscule marketing budget, by, you know, organizing on top of HubSpot, by using marketing technology, by using best practices in digital and social marketing, we are able to acquire a global customer base that we could never afford if we try to do it the traditional way. if we wanted to have to compete with the EMCs and the Dells and the NetApps and the IBMs and spend hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars going to trade shows and industry events and buying advertising, there was no way that we could ever possibly enter into this industry. And so in many ways, it's like a guerrilla war, right? In the Revolutionary War in America, where, you know, the Minutemen, the Patriots, you know, laid in wait for the Redcoats to come. And they did it with very few resources. So I'd say that is one very real example. And as mm-hmm. we look at the numbers, right, and I know you're all about numbers based on my pre-read, right, as we look at the numbers in terms of where our new leads are coming from and the cost per lead, they are a fraction of what the more traditional approaches are. And we do run A/B tests, and we still, you know, we're still trying to do some more traditional things with our salespeople, but, you know, each and every quarter they're becoming less productive. So I'd say that's one. The second one, which is more forward-looking, but I think that you're going to see us begin to put this in the market very quickly, is when Mark and I had our first meetings about me joining the company, my message was, I know that you're shipping an appliance, right, because it's like an iPhone. It's incredibly tightly integrated hardware, software, user experience. But that is not the future. And so my charge is to create an incredibly disruptive platform business model using freemium content, very much the way that HubSpot did in the early days with HubSpot Grader and WebGrader and BlogGrader. Very much like the way Slack is doing today, where it has, you know, it's one of the fastest growing companies to get to 5 million users with an incredibly, an unprecedented upsell rate. So, you know, this has been a very important part of my discussions with the management team, and I've got the full support of the board now to go do this, now that we have validated, you know, the early product. And I think it's going to be an incredibly disruptive event in the industry. And the whole team is mobilized behind this.
Okay. Perfect. So I have two more questions. And the last question is actually something that you might want to, it might be easier to answer over email. And
yeah.
It's the top three reasons, which we've covered here, but
yeah.
It's for a takeaway box at the top of the column that top three reasons why diversity within a company's hiring process
yeah.
is so important.
Yeah,
but
I'm happy to think about that and try to put it in some kind of coherent order for you. Sure.
Perfect.
Absolutely.
Perfect. So my last question is, taking in all that we've covered today, what are your thoughts around how C-level executives,
mm-hmm.
and not just within your industry, but corporately speaking, can take a bigger role in reversing the current conversation around immigration
yeah.
and becoming more inclusive to diversity?
So let me ask, so obviously there's many layers to this, right? And,
yeah.
and there's the national discussion. And, you know, we can go back to that dark day in January when Trump issued the immigration ban. And the Silicon Valley community, which is largely a libertarian politics-based community, was incredibly vocal, right? Incredibly vocal in terms of their resistance to that. I don't know how effective they were, but they were very vocal about it, right? And now we know more recently these ridiculous sexual harassment scandals in Silicon Valley, right? And the terrible track record that even what are purportedly very progressive companies like Google and Apple, right? They say they're progressive, but you look at the number of females working in these companies, it's very disappointing given what year we're in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a tremendous amount of lip service being paid to this stuff. And I think at the end of the day, you know, there's many levels to it, but if you're not focused on and valuing diversity in your own company, you know, you can say anything you want to a reporter or anything you want to your congressperson, but what matters is what you do. And I think, you know, it's a competitive advantage, quite frankly. I think anybody who understands the power of diversity has a unique competitive advantage in the way that they build their businesses. But this whole H-1B immigration thing is so polarized right now. And I will share this one last thing with you, right? When I was going through this process where I was being asked by many reporters to comment, I had a long discussion with the Boston Globe. And the reporter from the Boston Globe had a completely different point of view. He had talked to a lot of big company people who felt like the H-1B was poisonous, that its only purpose was to screw American workers out of high-paid jobs. And there's a tremendous amount of emotion and anger around that. And there's no doubt that the H-1B program has been abused, right? It's been absolutely abused by specific companies. And we've all seen the horror stories on TV with these people being laid off and told they will only get their severance if they train their replacements, which is incredibly undignifying, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have any simple answers for you. It seems so simple to me that, you know, this country wants to attract the best and the brightest. If you don't feel like you want to hire them, that's okay. But let's not forget what made this country great. Let's not forget what made Silicon Valley and Boston and the U.S. startup and venture capital ecosystem great. Let's go back to the statistics from the Kauffman Group and many other organizations that have proven that more than 50% of all unicorn companies are founded by at least one non-American citizen. And let's get real about, you know, the global war, the economic war with China is getting more real every day. And we're making mistakes that are going to be very, very difficult to recover from. I don't know if you saw the news yesterday, but you know, the Chinese leader has completely consolidated power. He is on an absolute mission to make China the world's greatest economy, right? He's got a unique ability to unify his country in a way that the American political system can never do. And I think we have to take that very seriously if we want to continue to live the kind of lifestyle that we've been lucky enough to live in this country for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. Mike, thank you so much. This has been such a great interview. I really have enjoyed getting the chance to talk to you. So I just want you to know how much I appreciate it. I like I said, that last question about your top three, I'll follow up with an email for that. And I had a few image requests.
Of course.
But, yeah, this is great. Again, I appreciate it. I'm going to go back. Usually my process now is to go back, go through the transcript, and pull this together. Don't be surprised if it takes a couple weeks before it goes live. But once it goes up, I'll be sure to send you guys a link.
I appreciate it. And, by the way, can I take 2 minutes to explain this image that we sent to you?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, it's the marketing org, right?
The marketing org, exactly. And what we were trying to describe to Scott Brinker. Do you know Scott?
I do. So.
Yeah.
So, MarTech Today is owned by Third Door Media, which is part. We were the MarTech conference in Boston. We were involved with that. In fact, I interviewed quite a few of our. The MarTech Boston panelists and speakers leading up to that conference. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I mean, given the way that when I went to your site and I saw all the MarTech logos, I assumed you were affiliated in some way. So, you know, as you may know, are you familiar with this? This was the first time that this new award was actually given. And
I did not know that it was a new award. I'm familiar with the awards program. But, I didn't realize, this was brand new.
So I think it's very relevant to our discussion because, you know, up until now, it's really been more about the marketing technology stack. And I think what Scott said is, you know, clearly organization and culture become an important part of the way that you manage your global marketing team. And so what this design basically embodies is the way that we think about how Reduxio's marketing organization – carries out its mission, okay? And so, and I'm not even looking at the image right now, but at the core, of course, you know, of any relevant business is, you know, both our customers, those people who are in our pipeline, and then the whole global IT community, right? And we exist to serve them. And going back to what I said earlier, right, our mission is primarily to educate them. Okay, we want to treat them with a level of respect. These are people that work very hard. They're very underappreciated. We've run some very interesting campaigns that have come from some of our students' ideas about how to bring value to them and make them feel like they're, you know, they're getting respect, because these people seem to only get abuse when things go wrong. And, you know, what are the three primary roles that my marketing team plays, including a very important one, which is the user experience? You know, what are all the sub-functions around what we do? Because even though it's a very small team, we have to compete with the biggest companies in the world. So what are all of the different sub-marketing functions, right? Marketing is not one monolithic thing. It's many, many, many little things that have to work harmoniously in order to be effective. And, you know, how does all of that play into marketing technology, and what role does marketing technology play and how we deliver against our mission? And then the very outer circle is color-coded, and, you know, all of the colors represent a single individual. And so you see how a small team of six people is competing against global giants, you know, by managing this organizational design. So that's the high-level overview. And I had the chance to present it to Scott. He was blown away by it and was kind enough to say that he thought it was the most innovative that he'd seen, and he awarded us the Global Overall Winner Award. I have yet to see the trophy. I was in Israel at the time, but I'm going to see it this Friday, so I'm looking forward to having a chance to see the trophy. It's been sitting in our Boston office, and I've been on the road for the last month. Yeah, so it was an honor. My team was very excited.
Were you at the MarTech Boston conference?
No, I was overseas, unfortunately.
Were
I was at Inbound, and then I wound up right after Inbound getting on a plane and literally out of the country for a month. We've opened up a bunch of European sales offices, and we were spending time there. We had a quarterly business review. Then we had our strategy session and our board meeting in Tel Aviv, and I'm just getting back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's been a crazy month.
Yeah, Inbound had quite the list of keynote speakers. So I was sad that I was unable to go to Inbound this year. Michelle Obama and Billie Jean King and Roxane Gay interviewing her, that was so impressive. So
I got to tell you, what they've done with that company is amazing, absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yep. All right, listen, this has been great, Amy. I deeply appreciate the thoughtful discussion as well. Really great questions, really great opportunity. I hope to stay in touch, and I appreciate you being honest that it's going to take a little while for this to come out. Normally people say, oh, yeah, it'll be out tomorrow, next week, or whatever, and it's a month later anyway. So thanks for being open.
Yeah, give me some time, but I'll be sure and share it with you guys once it goes up, and before then, any questions I might have when I'm going back through things. So thanks
anytime,
again. Have a great afternoon.
All right. Thank you. You too.
Right,
take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks both. Bye.
Bye.